Hey everybody, this is Tom here. I'm here with my buddy Andy. Andy, what's going on?
Fresh off the heels of 3-2-1, baby.
3-2-1, that's right. This is going to be episode 135. This is our reaction video for the docu-series. We are doing this live right now, but it will go to the audio in a day or two, you know, but here we're live now. We're going to get everybody's thoughts on this docu-series that, you know, we're glad we have. I mean, this is really, it was cool.
It's McCartney content, documentary. Yeah. I mean, and it's here. We heard about it for months. I mean, remember we first talked about it, oh boy, it had to be close to, 8 months ago we first heard about
yeah,
it?
Yeah, around the time of McCartney 3's release, we saw an image of McCartney with Rick Rubin, and we're like, what the hell is this? So this had to have been finished for a while now.
Right, this was definitely something maybe that was done at the height of COVID, maybe. Who knows?
Right.
Don't really know when that was, but, you know, it's here, and Tom and I both, of course, digested it within a few hours of it dropping.
Right. Yeah. So it did drop at like 9 p.m. my time last night. You got it around 12.
Yep.
Your time. So I did watch it all last night. You know, took a bunch of notes. Smiling, smiling a lot, yelling at the screen a lot,
lots of yelling at the screen. But I tell you what, I mean, it was full, and we'll get to all of it as we go through it. But there were moments of like, ooh, that's very cool, you know, or, but they were very few and far between. And I think everybody can agree on that.
So for those that are joining us, we will have a few spoilers in here. We won't try to get too crazy in the spoilers, but if you haven't seen it yet, you know, and you want to wait to watch this, you know, watch it and then watch this review. If you don't mind spoilers, then please stick around with us. But what'd you think about it being shot in black and white?
Loved it.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved it. As a creative person, somebody who's in a creative field like that, I thought that was very tastefully done. I didn't have a clue of who Rick Rubin was at all.
You what?
No idea.
You're not. You don't really.
No idea.
I'm shocked at that. Really,
had no idea who that guy was. None.
Wow. All the Johnny Cash albums he produced. You know, Tom Petty, Metallica, Black Sabbath. Danzig. You know, some. You know, Beastie Boys. You know. Wow. Okay.
I did not. I mean, I'm a latecomer to kind of the whole Johnny Cash Nashville stuff. So I would not have known it from Metallica or Danzig because that's not my speed.
Right.
So,
right.
But he was. I thought he was cool. I mean, Frank Marshall directed it, and he's got a. Right. You know, he's done a lot of stuff before. So, I like that it was broken up into a mini series and that it was all available at once. I thought that was that was cool. Instead of doing it once a week, they did it just. You know, 30 minutes.
Yeah, just dropped it all once. Yeah, I'm glad it was dropped all at once because, you know, these series, it kind of like when the episode was done, you were like, oh my God, I want the next episode right away. You know, it left you, when the show ended, it left you wanting more, which is a great thing about a show.
It did. Hello, Susan. And
hello, Susan. Oliver, Kit's here.
Yeah.
Queen, Chris, thank you. I know Kit's a big Rick Rubin fan, so
listen, we all have our musical bubbles that we stay in, and it's probably just somebody that just passed my radar. So you know, don't crucify me. But I didn't know who the guy. I didn't know who the guy was. I didn't. But I mean,
That's fine.
I probably know artists that. You know, most of these people don't know about. So that's all we're all
true. Another cool thing, you know, before we get into the episodes, break down the episodes, I mean, their enthusiasm for these songs was really infectious. I mean,
Very
infectious, you know. So, I mean, that too kind of, you know, got me more excited about hearing these stories again because they were just so excited about them, you know.
Very excited about them. And they were presented in a way that was fresh.
Right.
You know, yes, did we hear some of the same old stories? Of course we did.
Yeah.
But the way that the story was told and the flow of each episode, it didn't feel like, oh, here we go again with another story.
Right.
Like, I know it those moments came, and I know we'll get to that, but they weren't horrible.
Right.
They
both of them were very animated. you know, I just loved, you know, when they were playing a song, you would see Paul, you know, kind of singing and doing his, like, you know, hand gestures and stuff like this. Right. You know,
so the biggest takeaway I could take from me watching this whole thing, the highlight of the entire series are the moments when him and Ruben are at the four track mixer and they're mixing the multi tracks, and you're hearing things in songs that you normally wouldn't have heard, you know. And even Paul, I mean, that moment when they're playing Maybe I'm Amazed and you're hearing all that feedback guitar.
Right.
I could just take that for example. Those moments in this series is what did it for me. And for me.
Go ahead. Yeah. Yeah. See, those were those little nuggets that were for the hardcore fans, you know, because the series in general, I think, is for the casual fan. You know, you and I, we're not going to really learn much.
No.
Watching this. And a lot of people watching us right now. Right. There's really not a lot to learn, you know. So let's see, just watched episode one.
I had to download. And we should also preface that when we're both in America, we could see it.
Right.
Our friends in the UK have access to Hulu, but it was not released on the Hulu UK. That's unfortunate. So, you know, hopefully that this series gets over to our UK friends soon.
Right.
Because I know that our competition is chomping at the bit to see it.
He's watching it.
Is he? Yeah,
he's watching it. Yeah. So let's break down these. Let's go with episode one here. Now, episode one's called "These Things Bring You Together." Now, all the episodes, except for the last one, I think were taken from quotes he said from throughout the from each show. So you know, when you see this title, "These Things Bring You Together," it's because he said that during the show. So first thing right off the bat, you know, the first song they play, All My Loving.
Well, My Loving. Right.
Oh, just fine. You know, fine. You know, they break it down a little bit. Paul talks about John, how he was just strummed at the same thing for, you know, for like 3 minutes, you know, and how uncomfortable that may have been. You know, kind of new to me. But you know, then you start getting into the, you know, the same old story. You know, then he starts talking about his dad,
his dad, and then how he met George, and they went hitchhiking, and how, and, all that stuff, which we've heard ad nauseum. You know?
Yeah. You know, dad, you know, he was the guy that played the piano and led the songs on New Year's Eve, and then how he eventually took over, you know, then it gets into the getting better story. I'm like, okay.
We know all this.
Yeah. The one of the, my favorite parts was the, you know, the learning the chords for Michelle. And they talk about finding that chord, him and George, you know, find that chord for that particular song. And then he talks about learning the French for Michelle, you know, that was pretty good. And then he shows, one of the best parts about this series is if they mention somebody, they'll show videos. They cut to a video of that particular person, which I thought was a great touch. And that's the kind of thing that the hardcore fans will enjoy.
Right, like we've always heard about Mrs. Mills and the piano.
Right.
Well, who's Mrs. Mills? And they cut to Mrs. Mills.
Cut to Mrs. Mills. Right.
Banging away on the piano. That's cool.
Yeah, which was a great touch, which was a really good touch. You know, and then he gets into the Beach Boy story and how Pet Sounds, you know, influenced, you know, Pepper and everything. And then you get the Mel Evans, you know, Salt and Pepper story.
Right, which we know. So,
yes, exactly. And then, you know, the album was released on a Friday, and then Jimi Hendrix
was playing it, and lots of Jimi Hendrix love in this in this series too. In different episodes, we hear Jimmy referenced. We see clips of Jimmy several times throughout this series.
And then it ends with him talking about George, which was nice. And then they break down "While My Guitar Gently Weeps."
Right.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. That was one or two. That was episode one or two.
Episode one. Yeah, they break down "While My Guitar Gently Weeps."
And that was great. And then he talks about how he met Clapton again and how they both were in the studio. And he said to Eric, "Oh, we actually haven't been in here since we did the session." That was cool.
And then another part of the series that I loved is when they break down and they play an isolated, you know, Paul's isolated bass, you know, you see Rick, you know, getting really excited about hearing Paul's bass playing throughout this whole, you know,
the whole series.
And, you know, and he talks about, you know, about Paul coming up with these ideas for bass, because again, we all know he started as the guitar player and then worked his way to the bass, and then all of a sudden now he's just like a virtuoso. I mean, right off the bat almost.
And he said, you know, the bass player, as he said in the series, the bass player in the band was just like the fat guy. Nobody wanted to know the bass player.
Right.
The guy standing there doing this. So and I forget the gentleman's name that he referenced, the bass player, and Kid will know this because she's into soul.
Yeah, we'll get to that. I haven't written down. Yeah.
We'll get to that was, again, to your point about kind of talking about somebody and then showing us who that was.
Right. Exactly.
Case on point. That was done very well. But one of the other early aspects I did like, and again, we know the story, but it hasn't been told too many times, was the thinking of linking. I liked.
Because that's
a story that he hasn't told too many times. Right. We saw it as an extra in the anthology.
Right.
They do it there. He talked about it in the Mark Lewisohn book, but it's not one of those old Beatles stories that you've heard 1,001 times.
Correct.
So if he's going to bust out thinking of linking and how he saw it with George, I didn't mind it in this one.
Right.
I didn't.
Right. So finishing episode one, very Beatle heavy, like the most like most of the series is. We got a lot of right off the bat, I mean, it's we're not really learning anything, but we're getting some kind of new nuggets, video nuggets, some audio nuggets from the isolated, you know, from him isolating certain instruments on the board. So that was okay. So, you know, I don't think it's, you know, off to a great start really, but you know, as we can see, it's going to get better.
Yeah, it's going to get better. And I guess I this is just call me a sentimental sap, but any parts where he was singing along to the music, I love that. Like when he was singing With a Little Help of My Friends, which I think was in episode two. That was I love that. I absolutely love that.
Exactly. So let's get with episode two. So episode two, titled "The Notes That Like Each
Like
Other."
Like each other. Yep.
Like each other. So this was interesting because again, it has a few little snippets that for the hardcore fans.
Yeah.
First, he starts off with the piano. You know, tinkering with that, learning. He talks about him learning chords on piano, which is pretty interesting because you don't really hear him talk, you know, as a like an educator, you know, on an instrument from time to time, because he can't read or write music. So it's interesting to hear him talk about how he learns, you know, chords and stuff like that, you know. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
And I just I find it funny how he talks about how he goes back to Lipa, and which is now a formal music school, and he's like, I don't know how to read music. And they're like, what?
Right. So, you know, so obviously, you know, he's out dingling on the piano. So obviously you hear Let It Be. You hear Lady Madonna.
Eleanor he's talking about starting chords in C, in the key of C.
Yeah.
And how you can play a lot of songs in C. And of course, that's what Let It Be is in. And we go into that, to your point.
Right. Yeah. Really like the part when he gets in the Penny Lane, because, you know, right now, that's my favorite Beatles song of all time at the moment. But then we know the story of him talking about the piccolo trumpet. But it's really cool to see them then go into a little video of David Mason. You know him. Show him playing the piccolo trumpet.
Right.
And again, that's really cool. It's a great aspect.
I think we had seen some of that before in the anthology as
Yeah, we have. Yeah, absolutely.
But
it's just cool. It's a nice added touch for the series.
And again, the anthology now, I mean, we're dating ourselves, but that's 25 years old. So maybe the younger fans out there that are watching this may not have access to the anthology. So they're seeing some of this footage for the first time.
Right.
Also.
Exactly.
Also.
So what are we? What 35 years removed from the anthology here? Or
well, not 25, that. Not 25, that
25 years. Thank you. 25 years removed.
Right.
I don't want to make myself older than what I already am. But I mean, so there's a whole generation of Beatle fans that are learning. You know, they're hearing this stuff for the first time, which is
right. They say, we know the David Mason. No, I heard that on a Sunday night on a Brock Vandenberg. You know, trumpet. George, find me this guy. I mean, and, you know, we know all that. But, again, I think it's probably new for some other people. And that's fine. I mean, you got to know when you're watching these, they're tailor-made for the mass audience. And they're just not going to be made for people like us. And we, as long as you're okay with that, and we get little nuggets like we got in this episode. And I texted you right away. You knew I was going to.
Yeah, so then now, like halfway through this episode, we get our first like solo recording, and obviously it's Band on the Run. Okay, so now we're getting, you know, we're getting the Band on the Run story. We're getting, you know,
two guys quit
the night before. I wish he would stop doing that, because I mean, Denny Seiwell has debunked this in the past. He talked about, you know, Henry was already left the band weeks or months ago. You know, Denny said he did quit prior to, but then he did officially say, "I'm not going." I think the day of, actually. Right. But you know, but he had already quit. You know, so I wish, you know, Paul would stop telling that story that two members quit the night before.
It's just easy.
Makes for a good story. I understand it. It gives more drama to the story. You know, I get that part. You know, and then he talks about, you know, getting mugged. You know, the tapes.
I will say that there was some more to that Band on the Run story that was new for this one, which I like. He expanded on the whole fellow Ransom Cootie stuff a little bit, which that was a nice welcome addition, because all we heard about is that Ofella said, "Oh, you're stealing our rhythms and blah, 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 blah. Right. This isn't good."
Right.
But in this documentary, he expanded upon Fella. And again, we saw some video footage.
That was excellent, because I had never seen any footage of him before. And I was blown away by this. I thought, man, this guy is very talented and great. I want to see more of Fella Cootie. Great addition to this series. We basically know the story already, so obviously he's just telling us for the new fans. Then another surprise, Waterfalls.
I was happy as a clam.
Yes,
happy as a clam. You know I would be.
Right. And I was really blown away by what Ruben said. He's saying the melody is very today. You know, just meaning, you know, that song was ahead of its time. You know,
so 40 years ago.
Yeah. Exactly. Susan, yes, I agree. The elaborated Lil Cootie story. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. I loved how profoundly stoned he got when he went to Fellas Club. Exactly. Yeah. On the Kinks too.
We'll get there, Matt.
We'll get there. But I liked also too is that he talked about it. He goes, this is a song that fans write me about. You know, they're the deep fans. They're the deep fans that write me about Waterfalls.
Right.
He said that he wished he added more synths. He wished that he added more than just the synths, that he put maybe a little bit more of a orchestral backing on Waterfalls and not just synths, which I don't know. You know, I know that you're not the biggest fan of it either.
Right. But, you know, I also found something interesting. Another thing that Ruben said that I found pretty interesting was he goes, "I don't see you as somebody who has a lot of regrets." And, you know, Pat McCartney, you know, then he just said, "No, you just plow through." And you kind of like, you know, once you're done with something, that's it. It's done. Then you just, you know, plow forward, you know.
Oh, this is a good point, Marcus.
Marcus, we're going to get to that as well.
Yeah, we'll get to that as well, too. So Tom and I both sitting there watching it going, "No, that's not true. You were going to it. You were going to America anyway, you clown."
Yes.
You were going there. You were going there. Yes, it was, Kit. And it was a very nice surprise. I was like, Waterfalls. And I have to say, too, another observation, that this series was a little bit chronological, but it wasn't directly chronological. It bounced back and forth quite a bit.
And I was going to ask you about that, if you felt it would have been better if it was chronological, and or you don't mind it bouncing back and forth.
I didn't mind it bouncing back and forth. I really did. I thought it was a natural flow to go back and forth that way. It was, we're talking about Waterfalls, and then the next minute we're talking about, Tomorrow Never Knows.
Right, exactly. It's going from one extreme to the other. I kind of did like that. You know, I don't mind chronological, but then sometimes when you make it interesting, like they made it interesting here, it's fine. You know, I didn't mind the going back and forth, you know, from one decade to the other.
No, not at all.
You know. So great photos throughout that episode. Great photos throughout the whole series, too. I love the vintage photos that they show. I mean, some of these I don't think I've ever seen before, you know, some of these photos.
Very nice photos.
So that was a nice touch as well. So, you know, I guess and probably all that stuff comes in post-production as well, you know, adding, you know, all that stuff.
Absolutely. Color correcting and slowing down. Right. Yeah. That's a kid. When we pan over the photo, we call that a Ken Burns effect.
Yeah.
That's what
right.
They do it very well.
Yeah. So I was very, very happy with this particular episode. Episode 2, I thought was great. I'm really excited now about this series and looking forward to episode 3, which episode 3 now we're going to go to that. The people who loved us.
The people we love
were loving us. Meaning, you know, now he's been talking about all the acts that influenced the Beatles and they loved and getting to work, you know, meet them and work with them. However, the show starts with back in the USSR.
Right.
You know, you hear the story of that, you know, writing that. And then...
which, again, I don't know if he was talking about that with Ruben about, well, you know, Ringo might have told me just to go drum it. But I think...
Right.
That Paul drummed on that because that was during the 2 weeks when Ringo quit.
Right. So then he does say, you know, that's me on drums on there. You know,
right.
You know.
But then see the retail Ringo just told me to go do it. I don't think that's true. That was back in the USSR was done when Ringo took his little 2 week break.
Right. Let me ask you this then, you know, Rick Rubin's doing this special with Paul. He had to have heard some of these stories before. You know what I mean? Yeah, had to have. And, you know, and here he is, he's, you know, acting surprised when Paul tells him all of these
what
things.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Are you going to say, don't say that story, Paul? I've heard it many times. No. He's not going to say that.
You know, I think that was one thing I found a little irritating throughout the whole series, because he had to have known some of these stories.
He had to. But, I mean, this is something that's being produced. I mean,
right.
By Paul, you know, this is a MPL production through and through, so he's going to tell it his way, and Ruben's going to go, okay, I might know all this stuff, but I'm not going to, you know, I mean, what's he supposed to do, you know? Yeah. So it was agreed. It was a good surprise, for sure.
Yes.
Back in the USSR,
This is where he then again tells the story, we weren't going to go to America unless we had a number one. You know, he pulls Brian aside. You know, that's been debunked. They were signed to go on the Ed Sullivan Show prior to them coming to America before the number one. You know, so
it was done. It was done.
Right. But we're not going
until we had a number one. Okay.
However, it just makes for a better story. You know. However, though, we were booked to go to number one, but on our way there, our song became number one. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that kind of makes for a good story as well. You know?
Sure. You know, there are so many people now that are few people. There are so few people, excuse me, left now from that era. You know, as time marches on, stories like this that you and I and Kit and everybody else that's involved with this stuff that on that kind of a level – we know, but as this becomes accepted truth in 30, 40, 50 years from now, that's how it's going to be retold.
Right.
And that's the important thing. So, you know, the scholars, the Lewisons, the O'Tooles, you know, everybody that writes this stuff, the Ken Womacks that really write this stuff, they're the ones that actually have to kind of take this, remember this real history and preserve it.
Right. You know, so hopefully there's a lot of book nerds out there that will read those books by those authors and realize that, you know, not everything they say is fact.
And 50 years from now when we're gone and whatever, that's the important thing to know it. So, and I think that, you know, it's, again, like to your point, it makes for a good story, and that's why he does it.
Yeah. So another cool aspect of the show is, you know, he's talking about Little Richard, the Everly Brothers, Roy Orbison. Now these were, you know, obviously they're all acts that they loved and respected. And then they also got the tour with Little Richard and they got the tour with Roy Orbison. So, you know, there's the stories about those. And then it goes into I Love Her, which again, you know, now Paul was interviewed in the George Harrison documentary about And I Love Her. Finally gave him the credit he deserved for coming up with the opening. You know, and there's Kit. Thank you for mentioning the same breath as Lewis. And well, you deserve it. You deserve it, Queen. You absolutely deserve it. So that was really cool to hear him talk about, you know, again, George, and you've seen the clips of that song as well. You've seen George work on it. So, you know, again, this is all about Paul, but he's also paying respect to his fellow bandmates as well.
Yeah.
Giving them the credit where the credit is due.
And he was pretty selfless throughout it too. You know, if you know, there are points when he would just say, until I came in and messed it up and stuff like that.
Right.
He said that a few times. He was pretty selfless, I thought. I don't think he was too preachy, and you know, he was very kind of, you know, very, right. you know, equitable in his distribution of, hey, it was this person, right. it was that person, it was this person.
Right.
You know, I didn't get any ego off right. the vibe from this. I really didn't.
Right. Right. So then there was also, you know, our friend Matt Smith, who's here, who's a big Kings fan. And you know, so Rick Rubin asked the question, is there anything, any acts out there that you were surprised by that you had never heard before, or stuff like that? So obviously here he talks about the Kinks and their first big hit.
Number one, you really got me. Yeah.
Yeah. He talks about seeing Dylan, where the first half was acoustic. And the second half was all electric with the band.
And the old folkies were booing him. Right. And that was, yeah. and then Jimi Hendrix again.
Right.
Jimmy,
yep.
So,
yep.
you know, I think my favorite part of this episode though, was the story of going to India and then, mm-hmm. the Dear Prudence story, and then that
right.
hearing those isolated backing vocals on Dear Prudence.
Yes,
amazing.
Oh, amazing, because a lot of this episode is about the harmonies. He does talk about John, Paul, and George harmonizing on songs, and it's
amazing.
Really nice. Amazing, right? So yeah, so then the episode does end with the Maharishi story, and then them breaking down Dear Prudence, and then again you hear him play, you know, the isolated bass again, because you know there's a lot of that throughout this whole series. Is
a lot
listening to the bass in the song. So
also love the fact that they said that they actually remember seeing the Maharishi on TV when they
right.
were kids in Liverpool giggling, which I had never heard before either.
Mm.
I never knew that they were aware of the Maharishi as
that early
that before the Beatles. But he said that they were aware of it as kids seeing him on TV, because he was doing his TM, you know,
right.
for years. So maybe they were aware of him. But that I had never heard before. So wow, they were aware of the Maharishi as kids.
Right. So again, episode 3, very enjoyable. You know, great sound bites, great little videos throughout.
Yeah. Great sound bites throughout. Yeah, Kit. Yeah, this was a really good one for the backing harmonies. And not
right.
just this episode, otherwise you hear it. I mean, that's what
right.
we said at the top of the show, those moments where you hear the multi-tracks,
right.
you know, and actually Paul jokingly says in one of the, I forget which episode it is, he goes, that's why we don't mess with it. Well, you remember
right.
that part?
Yeah.
Ruben was messing with it. He goes, that's why we don't mess with these.
Don't mess with it.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to episode 4. Episode 3 was very enjoyable again,
yeah.
just like episode 2 was. So really looking forward to moving on. Episode 4, like professors and a laboratory. And this was a really good one too, because you know it starts off about how young they were and how they were able to talk to these engineers who you know don't want to play by the rules, but here they are, they want to break the rules because they're young and ambitious, and they were able to get away with this stuff because they've had some
Ooh.
Success.
Oh, they were, yeah.
Right,
yep.
yes. You know, so that was a really good good discussion. Then the first song they play is Nowhere Man, which let's see here, that was this guy.
Right, that's exactly,
yeah,
thank you,
yeah.
Matt. Thank
yeah.
you, yeah.
Yes. Then, you know, they talk about how they recorded the sound of the guitar
Matt?
Solo, Nowhere Man, where
Nowhere
it was
Man.
What, recorded half speed, and then it was then sped up or
well
whatever.
No say Hard Day's Night.
Okay,
he's talking about the solo. I mean, it could have been Nowhere Man too, but
yeah, it was
I
Nowhere Man. Yeah, yeah.
But the same concept of recording a solo and then speeding it
right.
up again,
speeding it up. Right.
Right.
Which right.
was done,
so.
Done.
Because in the studio, I mean, you only because of studio trickery or the soundboard, you can do something like that. But the really cool thing is then they moved to Maxwell Silverhammer. And again, isolated bass. And then, yeah, I was.
Isolated Moog.
Yes,
isolated
and the Moog. We'll get to that in a second. But, you know, they talked about the bass and how, you know, it sounded like a tuba. And it did. I didn't put that together, but yeah, if you're just listening to the bass on Maxwell Silverhammer, it sounds exactly like a tuba, you know. Really interesting. Yes. And then they then he found the Moog in the mix, and then he picked that up. And again, now you go right to what was his first name,
Robert
Moog, and you know, and they show a little bit of video of him. You know, they talked about how he was there, which I didn't realize that he was there.
Well, yeah, because
so,
he was one of the first ones to bring them. He brought them, right? The Beatles
right.
were the first ones to take delivery of the Moog, which
Moog,
thought it was actually pronounced Moog, but
they pronounce it Moog.
Right, but there's, but they were the ones to take delivery of it. Actually, George
right.
was the one to take first.
Right, Yes.
Electronic sound.
Electronic sounds, right. So then, you know, again, now they're talking about the guitar work for A Hard Day's Night,
right,
which was really interesting. And then they start working on the tape loops, talking about tape loops for Tomorrow Never Knows, which is interesting, too.
And then into a little bit of a bio on George Martin at this point in the episode,
right.
too.
Yes.
George's background.
Right, right.
You know, how they kind of always thought of him more as the father figure, and he always appeared much older than them, but in reality, right. he was just, you know, maybe 7 or 8 years older than them, maybe 10, but he appeared to be that fatherly teacher type to them.
Correct.
At that right. point, Paul Mill mentioned that during this episode.
Right.
Yeah.
Then it moves on to, again, which a really another cool part was meeting Ringo, the Ringo story.
Yeah. Moog. I thought so, okay. Susan. Thank you.
Right. And then, you know, now we get into the Ringo story. You know, they tell a backstory of, you know, meeting Ringo in the Hamburg days and how he would sit in every once in a while and, you know, the feeling they felt when he was finally a part of the band and, you know, hoping to be able to hold on to him because Ringo was such this, you know, this a big deal, you know, back then.
Right.
So then they start playing Another Girl and then they do the awesome. Isolated drumming part, you know,
love
again,
it.
which was excellent. And these are the kind of things that get you excited about this series, you know, because I'm not the kind of person, I know there's a lot of that isolated stuff out there on YouTube or whatnot, or bootlegs or whatever.
Yes.
I just don't seek it out. I don't really don't seek it out. So a lot of the stuff I'm hearing for the first time, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just blowing me away. It's great.
Right. And to just see it there, I mean, they're sitting there with a vintage 1960, whatever, 4-track mixer
right.
console.
Right.
Which, and you think about that, think about everything that went into 4 tracks, you know, back in the 1960s. Incredible.
Right.
All that stuff was just waddled into 4 tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And everything. I mean, Tomorrow Never Knows with tape loops on a 4-track machine in 1966.
Right.
Ridiculous.
Unheard of.
Yeah.
Right. Then again, now we're getting into Live and Let Die, another...
right, so but again, we're not really kind of going in chronology, now we're going to go to Live right. and Let Die, right.
Right, so we get the Live and Let Die story, which is fine, we've heard a lot of this before, you know, he gets the book, you know, Saturday, you know, and then, you know, he's got the song already done in his mind.
He didn't tell the full story, though, Matt, when he
right.
put it back to the producer, and they
right.
told him the demo.
Right.
He didn't tell the full story.
No, he didn't. Because that's going to get debunked too with the McCartney Legacy book as well. So,
oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah. So that was nice. But then another surprise at the end. Check my machine.
Check my machine. I'm like, whoa.
Right. Right.
Well, you know, clearly Ruben. Anyway, maybe it was Ruben or it was Paul when they were picking these songs to kind of, you know, focus on a solo career. Maybe Ruben was like, oh, let's talk about a couple songs from McCartney 2 because it was so
right.
experimental. Maybe that was
right.
Ruben. Maybe it was Paul. I don't know.
Maybe. You never know. But again, this was like the one little nugget for a hardcore fan. You know?
And then Paul's like sitting there like bopping to it.
Exactly. Both of them are bopping to it throughout this whole show. Both of them are really getting into
yeah.
the song, you know, which again is very infectious. You know, now you're getting into the song. So,
yes. And we know, yeah, we know that our friend, our graphic designer friend, Ethan Alexanian,
yeah.
will love that because he loves yeah. Check My Machine, but he also
yeah.
hates waterfalls too.
So. Right. So he's getting this favorite and least favorite.
Yeah. But yeah, Kit, that scene is, you'll love that scene, Kit. For sure.
It pops up and you're like almost like mind blown right at that instant. You're like, what?
What? He's sitting there popping
right.
and singing to Check
yeah.
My Machine.
Exactly.
He
yeah.
basically just said that it was just a riff that he just had fun with. It was just a
right.
riff.
Yeah, just a riff, you know. So, you know, no real big story around that, but just more like it was a riff and he just worked around that.
Although
exactly.
he does do the whole sticks and stones may break my bones.
My bones, right.
He does say that. He does
right.
say that.
Yeah.
Which is
so
that was
fun. So again, you know, episode 4 was a lot of fun, just like 2 and 3 were. And you know, again, I'm really, really having a good time watching this.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Episode go ahead.
No, I was just gonna
yeah.
say, I mean, all of them are great, but I think up to this point, watching the fourth one, the fourth episode was by far my favorite. And I still think even with two to go, it's my favorite in the series so far. Tom, do you have one yet or no?
No, not necessarily. I mean, 4 I thought was good. I thought 3 was really good as well. So
right.
I mean, 2, 3, and 4 were like, you know, really good. I mean, they just felt great watching them. So
right.
not really, you know, picking one as a favorite, maybe episode five here, you know, has a lot of good bits, and, you know, maybe that could be my favorite. We'll talk about that. Episode five now, Couldn't You Play It Straighter?
Yeah.
You know, starts off with lovely Rita. Again, they just isolate the bass part and, you know, listen to Paul's bass. You know, that's, again, one of my favorite parts of this show is just mm-hmm. listening to Paul's bass playing, because he could be the biggest innovator of bass, period. I mean, and there's better bass players out there, more creative bass players out there. I don't know if creative is the right best word, but you see people like Geddy Lee, you know, and stuff like that, you know, and they yeah. just sell out, you know, Entwistle, Chris
Squire, you know.
Right, exactly. But Paul, I think, probably was the innovator.
I think innovator is the right word, because those guys are just like super wizards. They can do everything, but the innovation aspect of it, I think that's Paul, that's Entwistle, you know, and Paul, I mean, and Ruben says this to him, you know, if you play bass, you can control the band.
That was another quote from Paul that I was just like, wow, he really said that, you know. Paul said that. Yeah, you can control a band by playing bass. And I was just really blown away by this is that episode. Episode five is where he says that. Yeah. So it starts with lovely Rita. You know, you hear the bass. Then he talks about, he tells a story about how he switched to bass. He has, like, him and John were the guitar players. You know, he had a chance to play lead on a sessions, and he blew it. He froze. And then he goes, okay, and that was when they pretty much came to being the bass player. You know, so then, you know, they talk about the first song he ever wrote.
Songwriting, I Lost My Little Girl.
Lost My Little Girl, absolutely. Then they get into the harmonizing with This Boy, which, again, was really cool. They isolate to just the harmonies. Again, you know, really moving when you hear the three, you know, harmonize together.
Yeah, and Paul talks about how Brian Epstein told them that, you know, you can't, you got to work some waltzes and some slow numbers into this. Because you can't have a rock concert of just, you know, you've got to work in some traditional song. And I think, was this the episode where they also, you heard a little bit of Babies in Black, or was that another one?
That was
this one, wasn't it? Because This Boy, Babies, they were trying to talk about how, you know, songs that were not really kind of rocky, more of a waltzy type, were working.
Right. I think we skipped the Babies in Black, but This Boy, and then it goes into Something Now. I mean, and then start playing the bass and the guitar from Something, and Rick Rubin is just, you know, he's just blown. His mind is blown by the bass on Something, which I think a lot of people's mind is blown on the bass of Something. It's probably one of the, you know, besides George's, you know, lyrics and, you know, singing on the song and his guitar playing, obviously the bass was a really big deal on Something, don't you think?
Absolutely. It was, I mean, now I know Susan says they have the bass cranked up at the console, but even still, you listen to Something on Abbey Road and the bass is, you could hear it right away, how it carries the song.
Yeah. You know, the bass is very well placed in the finished product of Something. You know, you hear it throughout the whole track. It's not buried or anything like that.
But again, just hearing it isolated. It's incredible.
Right. Then they move into the guitar solo for Taxman. Again, you know, telling that story, which, you know, we've heard before. And then he brings up James Jamerson, and then he goes to a clip of you know, of Marvin Gaye and James Jamerson playing with, you know,
playing what's going on.
And then they had the song there, and they kind of isolate his bass playing on there as well.
Awesome. You know, that was great.
He talks about James and how his bass playing was very melodic, you know, and how he was influenced by him too. So that was really cool. You know, and then we get into and that's where he says you can control a band with a bass.
And
you know,
this goes into the Come Together story now.
And this is come together, right? And he has the guitar and he's strumming it, and he's playing how John brought Come Together to the sessions, and it was
totally different.
Yes.
More faster, you know.
Yeah. So then now he's saying, well, it was his idea to the arrangement you know, slow it down. It was just like the way John brought it in was just like the Chuck Berry song, because you know it opens the same way. Here comes old Flat Top,
which right. I was waiting to see if Paul was going to touch upon how John got sued for this, but he didn't.
Right.
He didn't go there with it. I was waiting. Right. Okay, are we going to hear about the Big Seven lawsuit, Morris Levy, and how John had to do this? But
right.
He didn't. But no. And then they showed clips of the original clip of Chuck singing it, which was cool.
Yes, exactly. And again, another great point on our image and video of this series, because they're talking about it and they're also showing you, so you kind of get the sense of where they're coming from, which is a great addition. Then they move on to talking really, about the Beatles. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm saying it's interesting to hear. I never heard a story where Come Together was brought in a different arrangement. You know, that's
no, exactly.
We never heard that before. Where
right?
But that I haven't. Not anything that we've read, you know, where John brought it in, it was a kind of a faster, folky number, and
right.
Paul saw it saying slow it down.
Right.
You know, again, is it a historical revisionism? I don't know. Hopefully it's not, but
right.
I thought it was cool.
Yeah, no, it's very cool. Then they get into, okay, who we got to comment here?
Yep, love Paul's demo of the way John brought the song. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was a great addition. Then they talk about, you know, the breakup with the Beatles and where he was, and then, you know, him, you know, getting back into music and going back to basics and, you know, and recording at home, all this while they're playing Junk. And then
awesome.
they play Maybe I'm Amazed. They show him playing the piano for Maybe I'm Amazed. You know, you do
not hear... Not singing it.
Well, you do hear times where he is singing along, and his voice and his vocals are not voice is not good. However, his speaking voice does sound stronger than it has in the past.
Agreed. But it was cool. I know that when they were playing Junk, and it kind of gets to that part where Paul is kind of just mumbling the words, Rick Rubin goes to him,
right.
Oh, you didn't have any lyrics here. He goes,
right.
you didn't have any lyrics for this section, but Paul kind of just shrugged it off.
That's
you know,
right.
I love, yeah. Again, yeah. Those moments where they're just standing in front of the console is why this docuseries works.
Right.
And that's, again, songs like Junk, everything else that we've talked about. It's
right.
Awesome. Maybe I'm Amazed. And for a minute there, I'm like, is he going to start singing Maybe I'm Amazed now? But he didn't.
I think he definitely was smart not to do that. But 5 was amazing too.
5 was a very good one. And
right.
That's what we heard. There was this crazy feedback that you
right.
hear at the end of Maybe I'm Amazed. And Ruben's mm-hmm. asking him, like, what is that? And it's this crazy wonky guitar feedback on one of the mm-hmm. channels that Paul obviously just mixed out. But it's
right.
check that out. I mean, if you haven't seen that part, it's
right.
pretty wild to hear that. But there's all this kind of crazy distortion feedback
right.
on the finished master that was just mixed out.
Right. Okay, so that's 5. Then we get to episode 6, and here we go, last episode.
Yeah, the long and winding road.
The long and winding road. You know, it starts off with the Yesterday story, which, you know, you're watching the series and you're going like, is there a chance he's not going to tell the Yesterday story?
We made it through 5 episodes. I don't think we're not going to hear it. Oh,
and then right off the bat for episode 6, we get the Yesterday story.
Like, come on.
Right.
Oh, I was with my girlfriend. I actually just stopped watching. I just listened.
Right. You know, so yeah, you know, he brings the song to, he wakes up, he's got the song in the head, he brings it to John. Where, you know, have you heard this before? He brings it to George. Have you heard this before? You know, so yeah, unfortunately, you know, it's there, but whatever. There's somebody out there that hasn't heard the story yet. So, and you know what, we're going to get the story in the lyrics book in November as well. So, you know,
yep.
I guess we just have to deal with it.
We got to 5 episodes. We didn't hear it, kid. And then all of a sudden in the last one, right out of the gate,
right.
We hear it.
Right. So then, you know, he's talking about more, you know, this more obscure, you know, the B-sides that they would play in the Hamburg days. They're talking about James Ray. Then they move on to, and your Burke can sing.
That was cool.
Yeah, that was cool. You know, they broke that down a little bit on the console. That was a lot of fun. And then, you know, then again, when they moved to here, there, and everywhere. You know, that story was pretty cool. I didn't know that he wrote that song while he was waiting for John to wake up. I don't think I heard that before.
Yeah, I heard that one.
you know, he told him how that was, you know, John complimented him on that one. So that kind of vindicated the story he told a few years back on CBS, where he said that was the only time John ever complimented him
for anything good. Yeah.
Anything good was here, there, and everywhere. So that was fine. And then they end the show with A Day in the Life, you know, and breaking
right,
it up.
Which, just before that, Tom, if I may, he goes into his you know, I was going to kind of the London scene and checking out kind of John Cage and kind of
all this, good point. Yes,
all this kind of stuff. Yeah. And I thought about it and how kind of Paul's kind of going into the avant-garde. And to me, I said to myself watching this, is this Paul trying to say, okay, I was really kind of the avant-garde guy. And,
right.
You know, all the things that he kind of pushed in the Miles book, how he was sort of ahead of the court, you know, the avant-garde. And I thought the placement of that story to me had twinges of, hey, I was pretty hip and I was into this stuff. John wasn't.
Just a little bit. But I don't get the sense that he's saying, hey, I'm the avant-garde guy. I think he was just more or less saying I was aware of this stuff prior to John knowing about it. And then, you know, having John influence so much of that in his music. You know what I mean? I think it was just, hey, I knew about this stuff. You know?
Right. So, and then that goes into the Day in the Life story, which you were talking about.
And then again, we get to see footage of Cage, which was really cool as well. Yeah. I mean, just him knocking things over. That was really interesting because I haven't seen much footage of Cage. But that was really cool. And then we get into A Day in the Life. You know, all the bits the bits that he came up with. The fact that, you know, Rick Rubin asked if that was the first time they put two songs together, because you know Paul had his part, John had his part, and I think he said which is fine. And you know, he talks about the orchestration. You know, it says that was him on piano at the
he wanted George Martin to bring a full orchestra in, and George
orchestra
said, we don't
exactly.
need one and
we don't need
Paul
one.
Was like, well, for this one we need a full orchestra.
Right
and of
right.
course, you know, when a Beatle wants, a Beatle gets. So
a Beatle gets. Unfortunately, they didn't always get it when they were solo, but, you know, when they were a group, you know, they got anything they wanted.
Right. And again, we've heard the story about how the instruments, all the musicians were told to just play from their lowest, you know, scale to their highest scale.
Right.
You know, and no matter if you played, you know, a piccolo trumpet or whatever, it could be done in 2 seconds, just play it all. Right. And we've heard that story told several times. It's just, again, a fresh look at it now.
Yeah. Yeah. And Susan, I agree. I don't think he was slamming John at all.
Right.
You know, so I agree. I was Vivian say?
Yeah. Paul pointed out how the string section and the crescendo of Day in Life stuck together as they ascended, but the horns were more random. Yes.
Right. And then, you know, he played the piano chord that ends the song, you know.
Yeah. Put that on a shirt.
That's right. There you go.
You got it, Queen.
And then before you knew it, show was over. You know, no, hey, thank you for doing this or anything like that. So, kind of felt like, you know, maybe they'll do more of these in the future. I don't know.
I tell you what, but, I mean, it went by very quick when you watch these, and it was like, now if you watch them all in one setting, which I think pretty much you did, and I broke it up, but I mean, it goes by. I mean, it's 30 minutes, but I mean, 3 hours. I mean, it's, I didn't feel like I was bored watching it. I don't think
you did either. Not at all. And I'll tell you, one of the great things about these episodes is they're jam packed. There's no lull period at all during these episodes. You're going from one thing to another. So it's very well edited to keep your attention and to keep you interested. You know, there's no down periods at all during these episodes. I was just like entranced this whole episode.
Which I think by not doing it chronologically lends itself to keeping the viewer into it. Because if it's not chronological, you don't know, well, where they're going to go next. Are they going to go back to solo, or are they going to go back to the Beatles? Right. So from a viewership and an audience standpoint, that was a wise decision, editing.
Right. So overall thoughts on this episode. Now, I was very blown away. I really enjoyed it. As we said before, this is really not for the casual fan. I'm sorry, it's not for the hardcore fan. It's more for the casual fan. So, you're going to learn a little bit, but you're not going to learn a lot. For the people that are watching, like you and I and the people that are watching, you're not going to learn a lot, but you're going to hear things that you might not have heard before, which is really cool.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that it was so Beatle heavy.
That's a negative for people like us.
Right, right. However, you know, like I said, the show leaves you wanting more. When it ended, I was like, oh.
When you watched each one, every ending, right, every episode was like it was cut quick.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It wasn't like a fade out. Okay, this is the end of the episode. No. It was like they were talking, right, and then fade to black. Cue the music. It was, you know, very, very, very quick.
Yes.
Like, okay, and I think that was done on purpose, and it was done well.
Yeah. Lots of cool vintage photos and videos that I hadn't seen before. That really kept my interest in this series as well. And again, he gives praise to the other three. It's just not, I mean, yeah, it's McCartney, but he's also paying respects to the other three as well, you know, throughout the series.
I mean, the guy's, you know, he's going to be almost 80 years old, and he's at that point. Why am I going to, what point is there to, you know, take anybody down now? Everything is,
oh yeah, exactly.
You know, life is too short, and I think everybody really is in a good place. He's not going to give anybody credit or undue credit. You know, he's had 50 years to think about it and stew on this stuff. Yeah. I mean, so it's kind of, you know, bygones being bygones.
But are you put off at any way of him wanting to let people know what he did throughout his career? You know what I mean? Like, you know, he's talking about everything he did in a day in a life. I mean, should that matter to us? You know what I mean?
To me, to you and I, no.
Yeah.
But again, to my earlier point, he is trying to pave a narrative for after when he's gone. So when your kids, my kids, or our grandkids look at this, what is, you know, what's being, okay, oh, Paul said on this documentary in 2021 that he did all this.
Right.
He wants his legacy to be intact. And that's why he's done this for the last 25 years or so.
Right.
You know, to really
understood.
To do that.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I will watch this series again. I'll watch it when I can play it a little louder. I couldn't play it as loud as I wanted to while I was watching it last night because, you know, I got to be considerate with the wife sleeping, you know. But I will watch this again. I don't think it's as playable or replayable as the anthology was.
No.
But it's definitely definitely is replayable. I will definitely go back and watch this again and see if there was anything that I missed because there was.
Yeah,
you know, there definitely was.
No, we wanted to watch it to digest it and be the first to talk about it. So something like this, even though we know 90% of the content, the way that the story was told, you know, it was just different and fresh, and it definitely is worth a reviewing of at least, I would say, a couple of times easily. Now let's talk, you know, do we think it's going to get any kind of release? I don't think it will.
Right. You know, there was a post by our, you know, Mitch Axelrod, who said that it looks like as for now that it's not going to get any kind of physical release. It's just going to be exclusive to Hulu, which is fine. You know, but I can see in the future at some point, maybe next year, maybe in 2022, after, you know, they get as many people as they can to watch it, maybe then they'll finally put it onto to home video. But it's fine now. We both have Hulu, so we can watch it whenever.
Yeah, and I know there was a lot of chit chat out there about should I get Hulu, should I not get Hulu. I don't listen. I have no affiliation with Hulu, but they're a good service. And listen, just get the trial version if you haven't seen this. Get the trial version for a week or whatever, and cancel it and watch it that way. I mean, it's. Yeah. But it's a good service, and I think everybody should get it.
Listen, this is not going to be the only thing that's on Hulu. There's going to be other programs on Hulu that might spark your interest. You know, there's a great documentary out there called The Summer of Soul that just came out, which is amazing.
Right.
The Aretha Franklin Amazing Grace is on there, and that's amazing. So, and then there's, you know, regular TV shows are on there. They have movies, so there will be some stuff on there that might interest you to have Hulu and to keep it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, this is going to be the way, I mean, look, you know, as a side note, you know, Disney Plus is going to be, Get Back is going to be the only way to see that. So this is the way of the world now, and it's another subscription, but you want to see this content. This is what you're going to need to sign up for to get it.
Right. Yeah, Summer Soul was great, Oliver. Glad you enjoyed it.
All right, so Tom, give me on a scale of 1 to 10, how are you rating this?
I'll give it a 7.
Same.
Yeah, I'll give it a 7. Even though we know most of these stories, it's still enjoyable. We're still getting tidbits that, you know, we haven't seen before, you know, and as to your point of them playing with the council, brilliant. That's the gold of the series, I believe. And then, you know, yeah. So 7 for me, enjoyable. We'll see how I feel once I see it again.
Right.
You know,
is this just a one-off thing that's not revisited, right, or do they revisit it again? Because God knows,
right,
you know, there are people out there that will watch him talk about his own solo career the same way.
Right. And, you know, it was would have been really cool if they say, hey, you know, it was nice working with you on this. You know, it would have been to have a nice ending rather than just, you know, fade to black. It's over, you know.
Well, that kind of lends itself to the, well, okay, maybe there's more to these.
Maybe there's more to these, you know. Will they do an album together? I mean, will they work together? You know, I mean, did they like each other enough during the making of this project that where, you know, Paul says, hey, well, maybe let's work together. Let's make some music together. You know,
maybe
that would be really cool.
Yeah, I would recommend it. I mean, listen, I would recommend this. It's a new McCartney documentary in 2021, and it's worth it. Again, for seeing them at the console and hearing these songs, you know, faded in and faded out with the multi-tracks. Right. It's worth it for watching it for that alone, aside from the handful of stories that you know by heart.
Yeah. There you go. So that's our thoughts on this series, McCartney 321. If anybody has any questions, you can ask us any questions about the show, and you know, we'll stick on for a couple more minutes. there's Steven. How you doing, Steve? Are we getting anything for Record Store Day? Yeah, we'll, you know, my wife and I will be heading over to Record Store probably around, you know, 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, as we always do.
I'll be picking
up Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I know my wife wants the Cat Stevens, Harold and Maude soundtrack. So yeah, there'll be a few things that we'll be getting.
Yeah, no. I did last month. I'm skipping this one because, you know, we've got something coming in a few weeks that, you know, so, yes. You know.
Yeah. And obviously I got an email from Amazon saying that August 6th is still the release date. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Good.
Yeah. Good. Because, you know, I also pre-ordered the CD set and those. And so they gave an update saying that the,
You're going to get that too? No, because you're getting that.
Well, so here's the thing. I'm debating on it because I'm thinking about giving it to someone.
Oh, as a gift. Okay.
As a gift. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think I know about that.
Yeah. No, I will not be getting the Monkees releases.
No.
Past that. Passing on that, my friend. So, but yeah, it was enjoyable. Now looking forward to the Get Back for Disney Plus. Now I will be getting Disney Plus in November. The more I think about it, I love Star Wars. I'm a Star Wars
junkie. I was going to say, you got it. You should have had Disney Plus when that thing launched.
Right,
man.
Right. Yeah, I know.
Come on, man.
I know there's some Disney films that my wife and I both love. You know, I have wanted to see the Mandalorian series. They are doing an Obi-Wan Kenobi series.
Yes.
So that I'm looking forward to. So, you know, what the hell?
Get it. Yeah.
Get it. So we'll get in November.
Yeah. No, thank you, Susan. No problem. Yeah. You definitely always heal the nuances when you re-listen to them. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes, so. Indeedy. So yeah, we are both we're fans of this series, and again, watch it once or twice. I don't think it's gonna be something we watch 10 times, but you know.
Exactly. It's something you're not gonna want to watch right away or rewatch right away. Kind of like how we did with Anthology. It's like I was watching Anthology, when it came on video and then DVD, I mean, I was watching that like every other day.
All the time.
Right. This you'll probably want to space out, you know, between repeat viewings, you know. So
yeah, or if you find a favorite episode, you just lock in with the favorite episode.
Yeah,
and you just watch
exactly.
That.
Yeah, exactly. So Absolutely. So this was our look at McCartney 321. Anything else you want to say before we hit out of here?
Not much, man. Not much. This is going to be our episode 135 as well for those that follow on our audio portion. So that will be up tomorrow or the next day, and we wanted to use that as our next one. Susan's asking us, are any of us getting the no? Tom is, not me.
Yeah, I did pre-order the Splatter vinyl, and thank you, Kit. Appreciate that. Thank you, Kit. Yeah. I did pre-order the Splatter vinyl, and that was it for the vinyl. I probably will pick up a copy on CD as well, and then that's it. I did not go anywhere near as crazy as we did for the McCartney 3 proper release.
Sadly, Rory, I don't know how you can watch McCartney 321 in the UK. There's probably ways. It's 2021. Yeah. What those are, I don't know, and I can't tell you, but I'm sure there's a way.
Right.
There is. When's the next episode of Anything But the Beatles, Andy? As soon as Ethan and I can work out our schedules, because as we know, this is something we do on the side. And as soon as we can lock in our schedules and do it, we will do it. And it's going to be on the Beach Boys album. So, yes, love you.
Yeah. Great. So obviously, if you're new here, if you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's growing. We want to continue growing the YouTube channel. So thank you for subscribing if you have already. You can email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at Two Legs Podcast. We really appreciate all the newcomers and especially the people that have been with us for years. We really appreciate you guys checking us out. So thank you for that. We will be back next week for a not live show. We're hoping to do a picture sleeve. Pictures, 45 picture sleeves from around the world with a couple friends, showing picture sleeves with a couple friends. And that would be just an exclusive to YouTube. So we'll be back, I think, next Wednesday maybe is what we're going to try to do this. So be on the lookout for that. And Andy, as always, it's good to see you, my friend. Thank you for everything you do for this show. It is much appreciated. And I think that might be it, huh?
That's it, man. Happy to be here. And again, good luck watching it. And I'm going to rewatch it again tonight or tomorrow for sure.
Cool. Excellent. All right, everybody. Thank you for being here. And we will talk to you soon. And as always, have a great day and a beautiful night. Take care.